As I plunge deeper into inequality and instability, I continue to find things I'm grateful to Galbraith for, in addition to the ones we talked about last week, the big one being establishing and calling our attention to the global downward pattern of increasing disparities, as seeing that pattern, I believe, is key to seeing the whole, seeing what power's up to, seeing from the vantage of the whole, seeing that this is about claiming the whole globe. Either they do it or we claim it for ourselves by helping each other. But I'm realizing this week that his turning the spotlight on his own profession is a big deal, because economics, or rather controlling how we think about economics, is key to their control, as life must be alive before it can be anything else. And so we all have a very strong interest in how we will get our food. But until now, with this current manufactured crisis undermining all the cons that economics had lovingly crafted to serve its masters, until now, the discipline was pretty unreflective. But now it's asking questions. And Galbraith's are arguably the most incisive. And in inequality and instability, he opens the door into their private chamber, shows what they were taught, how they arrived at their conclusions, and allows us all to scrutinize their process, examine their reasoning. And particularly in the light of current events, we can see more clearly the holes in its facade. We're beginning to see reality. Using the phrase, as I did last week, that, quote, we are all tied in a web of obligation via the market, unquote, I should rather have said tied in a web of obligation via our belief in the market, in the notion that it's okay for power to have its way with us at will, for that's what the market is, in truth. So let's look at what the market is and what it isn't, using the Galbraith book. Kuznets, we glean from what Galbraith tells us, wanted to believe that power had developed a system, a mechanism, a machine, clockwork, that would deliver prosperity, that incomes would magically rise as the nature of work became more about mind and less about hand, that mind makes income, wealth, money, is the con. But what he apparently couldn't see is that what he discovered was simply our human creativity, seized by the few who inflate their egos by absorbing us, much as the vampire myth suggests they eat their fellow humans. Wherever the market could not work, quote unquote, i.e., freely without interference, but Engels pointed out long ago that power, the longing for supremacy or competition, would always skew things to serve its own interests, attempt to rig the rules, formal or manipulated, i.e., de facto, in its favor. That is to say, there's no such thing as a free market. For power, it has always been, from day one, about winning. The market under class is a con, the market in quotes as a notion, a concept, under class is a con in the service of power, a logical fiction, a fiction of logic to placate the people's need for fairness. Because we have a big need for fairness. For us, honesty is a virtue because we are good, and that's our nature. That's why I say these folks are very damaged. They did not get to experience empathy. No one gave them that. They didn't get it. They can't give it back. And now they're fulfilling the dreams of their fathers. They're continuing to try to install the perfect society, they think, which means there has to be a captive group of folks willing or forced and have no other way, trapped into being the slaves, because they know and we know, we all know, if you can't eat, there's no such thing as free. So they are not going to give up this notion of rigid fixed class divisions, period. And why aren't we talking about this? I mean, if we just sat for a minute and reasoned this all out, we would see the logic, the obviousness of where they're going, and realize just as they are unequivocal in moving where they want to go, the only way to stop that train is for us to develop a similar fierce determination to realize our vision, but we have to start talking about what that is. And folks, we're going to have to take that big leap of trust in our brothers and sisters. We've been taught not to, so it's a challenge. Hey, but if you can take a leap out of an airplane and trust that parachute, trust the parachute of your brothers and sisters. Trust that. And also, keep your eyes wide open, because just like the folks in Turkey are saying, they know that the folks doing violence in the streets are being paid. They know that, we know that. That tactic has always worked because we weren't able, as Nikola Tesla told us, to share our knowledge across the world, across the globe, in real time. We are finally catching up to powers, cons, schemes, tricks. And we have to keep talking with each other about what can hold strong, regardless of what they try to do to undermine it. That's why I said last week that to say we need a mass movement to end wage work is not something they can get in front of. To say reverence for the earth, nonviolence, no division, these are key precepts of a free globe that they cannot get in front of. But it starts with us being free, because we can't care about the earth drowning if we're drowning. So we have to get behind each other and acknowledge that getting behind each other is getting behind the earth. Please, let's start saying these things. The market underclass is a con in the service of power, a logical fiction, a fiction of logic to placate the people's need for fairness and quell uprising anger at the, in fact, gross inequality of it all. He says that those who followed Kuznets lost his message, was but opportunistic empiricism. But the Kuznets curve was itself a fiction, itself idealistic empiricism, a creation of his imagination. He sculpted it into a shape to fit the facts, the shadow of the facts he found, but was itself untrue. And so the next piece of our study of truth is in how to distinguish fabrications, creations of imagination shaped to fit the facts from truth.